Okay, it's recording. Okay, good evening, everyone. So this is the third and final installment for the on the subject of Amir al-Akum. So just quickly, the first year we discussed the actual prohibition of Amir al-Nahri. So we talked about the idea that the non-Jew is sort of like a shliach of the Jew, l'chumra. We say that the non-Jew is like a shliach. So if he's performing a malacha based on my instruction, on some level, it's as if I'm doing it myself. And we also discussed that there's another prohibition of Amir al-Nahri, asking a non-Jew to perform a malacha is a violation of Vedaber Dover. It's a violation of speaking about forbidden activity on the Shabbos. So that was basically the gist of the first year. The second year, we talked about an interesting idea that even if a non-Jew would initiate a malacha on behalf of a Jew, on his own. He initiates it on his own. I didn't even ask him to do it. So the halacha is that we're not allowed to derive any benefit from that malacha, not only on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov itself, but we even have to allow the amount of time that it takes to elapse after the Shabbos and the Yom Tov. That was the topic of the second shir. And the Rashi and the Tosfos, they argue about the reason behind that. Tosfos says that it's a disincentive in order to remove the temptation of violating and asking a non-Jew. So in order to avoid that temptation, we're not even allowed to benefit even if the non-Jew does it on his own. And Rashi says the reason is that it's inherently forbidden to derive benefit from any malacha performed on the Shabbos or the Yom Tov. And we discussed the differences that would emerge between Rashi and Tosfos. So that was the first shir and the second shir. So the third shir, we're going to go through some of the categories, some of the situations, some of the reasons when it's permitted to actually go ahead and ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha. And naturally, when we're permitting you to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha, you'll also be able to benefit from the malacha that the non-Jew did, because the Chachamim, they waive the entire prohibition of Amir al-Nahri. So we're going to go through the scenarios. So really it's a list of categories of heterim, but for the purposes of learning the sources together, we'll discuss the background behind each heter and where it came from. So the first heter, and these Gemaras are primarily in Maseches Shabbos and Maseches Erevin. So the first heter, the first category of heter, the first example that you would be allowed to ask a non-Jew outright to perform a malacha is a chola she'ein bo sakana. A chola she'ein bo sakana, somebody who's ill, but he's not yet in any danger of life. So naturally, if there's any threat to life, even a Jew himself could perform malacha in order to save a life. So we're not even discussing when there's any danger to life whatsoever. We're discussing a chola she'ein bo sakana. We're discussing a chola, somebody who's below the level of sakana. He doesn't have sakana. Now, how do we define a chola she'ein bo sakana? So the poskim, it's a little bit of a gray area. The poskim say that there are two basic criteria for a chola she'ein bo sakana. A chola who's not yet in any danger, but he's a bona fide chola. So there are two criteria. Either that he's bedridden, so he's not in any danger, there's no threat to life, but he's bedridden. He's bedridden either because he has a fever, or he has a high fever, or he's bedridden because he has mono, or he's bedridden because he's in pain, he's in excruciating pain, whatever the reason why he's bedridden. And then the place can also go and expand the definition that if the person can't be productive because of his illness. So the person has a migraine, even if the person doesn't have a fever, or even if the person has a fever and the person's not technically bedridden, the person is walking around, he's around and about, but if he can't function because of his illness, he's in the category of a chola she'ein bo sakana. So that would mean that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform any malacha that will ease the pain or comfort the chola she'ein bo sakana, even a malacha d'oraisa, even something that we're not allowed to do min haTorah. So here's the Gemara. We had this Gemara not too long ago for those that are learning the Daf Yomi. Isa b'Pesach Shabbos, It says in the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chaf Tes Amid Aleph, 129a, that Achaya, so Achaya is a woman who has given birth, Gimel, Zion, and Lamed. So there are three time periods surrounding a woman who just gave birth. You have the first 3 days, you have between the third day and the seventh day, and then you have between the seventh day and the 30th day. So Gimel, the first 3 days, this is what the Gemara says, Ben Amra Tzricha Ani, or Ben Amra Loi Tzricha Ani, whether the woman says that I require something. So the classic example is that we're speaking about on Shabbos, so she needs cooked food, and there's no cooked food available on Shabbos. So probably a lot of this wouldn't be relevant today. Nowadays, you know, we have plenty of food, there's plenty of cooked food, so it's more for the concept. If a woman just gave birth, and she's within the first 3 days of her childbirth, so whether she says that she needs it, or whether she says that she does not need it, even if she claims she doesn't need it, but the women, the midwife, or the women around her say that she does need it, it looks like she does need it, so the halacha is, mechallelin aleha es haShabbos, even a Jew could violate the Shabbos. So you have a woman within the first 3 days of having given birth, and she needs something done, whether she admits that she needs it or not, but she's considered at risk, and if there's a tzorech, that if it's not fulfilled, if there's some need that's not fulfilled, it could aggravate her condition, then even a Jew could be mechallel the Shabbos. The first 7 days, that means after day three, until day seven, including day seven, Amra tzricha ani mechallel allows the Shabbos, so her condition is easing, is improving somewhat. So if she says that she needs the malacha, then even a Jew can perform the malacha. However, Amra loy tzricha ani, but if she herself says she does not need the malacha, then even if those around her say that they think that she needs it, ein mechallel alav haShabbos, we no longer have the right for a Jew to be mechallel the Shabbos. Lamed, the first 30 days, that means after day 7 until day 30, including day 30, afilu amra tzricha ani, ein mechallel alav haShabbos. Even if the woman claims that she needs it, we're no longer allowed to be mechal Shabbos. This is under normal circumstances because we assume that she's already out of the red. She's no longer in a matzav of sakana. Obviously, every case has to be judged separately, individually, but as a normal assumption, she's no longer in a matzav of sakana. However, and this is what's relevant to our discussion, so even up until and including day 30, aval oisin al yedei armoi, but we are allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform any malacha that the chaya, that the woman who gave birth, needs, up until and including the first 30 days. Why? Kedra Ula braid the Rabbi Loi. Like Rav Ula says, the son of Rabbi Loi, the Omar that Rav Ula says, called Tzorche Chola Nasin Ahidei Armoi B'Shabbos, that any needs of a chola, and the Poskim explain that it's referring to a chola she'im by sakana, which means that it's not just a pain, it's not just normal aches and pains or some minor ailment. We're talking about a chola she'ein bo sakana, that it's one level down below sakana. So the woman just had a baby within the first 30 days, so she's in a weakened state. She's no longer in danger, but she's in a weakened state. In that case, you can ask a non-Jew to perform a malach. And again, Kedar Rav Hamnuna, it's like Rav Hamnuna, so the Gemara brings these various sources. Diomar Rav Hamnuna, Davar she'ein by sakana, if the person is no longer in sakana, but the person is seriously ill, oimer lenochri va'oisa, so you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to perform. So this is the way the halacha was presented in the Gemara. It was presented in the context of a woman who had just given birth within the first 30 days. It said more specifically about any chola, and Rav Hamnuna clarifies we're speaking about a chola she'ein bo sakana. So if there's ever a case of a person who's an ein bo sakana, he's not in danger, but he's a chola, which means he's bedridden, or his condition would warrant being bedridden. In other words, he has a migraine, even if the person technically is not in the bed, they're up and around. You know, everybody has a different, everyone's made out of a different stamina. So the person's up and around, but the person would be classified as a chola she'ein bo sakana, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha. So what would be a good example of that? So a good example would be, if it's very cold, So this is like a more common example. But oifin de karma'o, if it's very cold. Now the poskim debate what's considered very cold. It doesn't just mean that it's chilly. It means it's very cold. A person really feels cold. So it's nechshav kechol she'en bo sakana. So this is the basis. It's brought in Shulchan Aruch that if a person is very cold, so that is automatically considered like a chol she'en bo sakana, because the person is at risk of getting very sick. And therefore you're allowed to ask a non-Jew, lahadlik madura, you can ask a non-Jew to light the bonfire, or nowadays that would mean turning up the heat. And turning up the heat in the house most likely involves an Isur D'oraisa. In the old days, lighting the bonfire, adding fuel to the fire would certainly involve an Isur D'oraisa. Even nowadays, if you're burning gas or oil or whatever the furnace, whatever is running the furnace, even if we're dealing with electric, where it's not so clear in the poskim if electricity is considered to be a fire, but you have to know how the heater works. But most likely there's some red hot element, whether it's metal or something that's being heated up by the energy, by the electricity. That red hot piece of metal that's causing the heat is considered a fire. According to the halacha, it's considered havara. If metal gets red hot, if there's an element in there that's getting red hot, it's considered like it's cooking and it's considered like it's kindling. So it's involving an isur d'oraisa. Nevertheless, in order that the person shouldn't be cold, because being cold could cause a person to get sick, that's automatically in the category of a chol she'en bo sakana. So if you have a person who has a migraine, you have a person who's very cold, you have a person who has some other ailment, an infection or something, you can even ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha d'oraisa. So for example, if a person has an infection, so it's a chol she'en bo sakana, it could be dangerous. Again, personally, technically the person's not bedridden, but it's an illness that could create a serious condition, an infection or something. So you're allowed to ask the next door neighbor to perform a malacha, which could entail going to the pharmacy, getting the medicine, calling the doctor. A lot of these activities would not even be an Isur D'oraisa in the first place, but even if it would involve an Isur D'oraisa, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew. Now, we had it recently in the Daf Yomi. There was an example where we permitted the father to pick up the child, even though the child was holding muksa, and the Gemara explained because the child had such a love for his father that if he didn't pick up the father, if the father didn't pick up the child would start having a tantrum, and the child could start getting sick from that. So it's actually brought in the halacha. The Rama brings it in Shin Chav Kes in 328 in Aruch Chaim Sif Yud Zayin that a tzorche kata, a child. Now a child means a little child, where he's included automatically in a chola she'en bo sakana. So kiven de olul l'chalos, because it's very common, if the child's needs are not taken care of, they can become sick. So we classify the child, the little child between 3 years old, 5 years old, below 5 years old. It's not a clear. It depends on the temperament of the child, and it depends on the stamina of the child. But if the child tends to get sick, if the child is not eating, the child is finicky over a certain particular food. So I know it sometimes happens at home that the child refuses to eat what the mother prepared for the child. So by now we probably know what our kids like to eat. But technically, if you have a child who's a finicky eater and the child refuses to eat, so the Rama says you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to cook whatever the child wants on Shabbos, because stam tzarchei katan is kecholah she'en bo sakana dami, that we just automatically presume that a small child, if his needs are not met, so he could become sick because of that. Again, it has to be judged on a case by case. But if the child is in a situation where if his needs are not met, it could be detrimental to the child, then you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform even a malacha d'oraisa. Another common example is if you have a little child who's afraid of the dark, so somebody's children or grandchildren are afraid of the dark, and we forgot to leave the nightlight on in the room, so the child refuses to go to sleep. So obviously, if the child is going to stay up till 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning till the child conks out, so the child could, it's detrimental to the well-being of the child. So you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to, if you have a neighbor, that kind of relationship, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the nightlight, which could possibly involve, depending on the light bulb, the type of light bulb, it could involve even an Isser Deraisa. Nevertheless, you don't have to concern yourself with that because you're allowed to ask a non-Jew even to perform a Malacha Deraisa on behalf of a small child. Because the needs of a child, if they go unmet, it could be detrimental to the child. We automatically consider the child like a chayla she'ein by sakana, and it's based on that Gemara that we had recently in Shabbos, that if the child is going to get hysterical, going to have a tantrum because the father's not picking up the child, so we waive certain isurim because the child is considered a chayla she'ein by sakana. So all of this is the level of a chayla she'ein by sakana, which means that the person's not in danger, but the person is sick, or the person could become sick. In Dalid, so we talked about a choli tzas. If the person just has a minor ailment, person has a cold, the person's not comfortable, person has a slight fever, a slight headache, so these kinds of examples, we know the halacha, you're not even supposed to take medicine on Shabbos if it's just a slight aches and pains, a slight ailment. You'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform an Isser Derabanan. You would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform an Isser Deraisa. That's only if it's a Chola She'ein Bo Sakana. The person has to be sicker than that. The person has to be bedridden. But if the person only has a minor aches and pains or some minor ailment, so you have a small a sunburn, or the person has a sunburn, the person has some sort of a minor headache, so you can ask a non-Jew to perform some kind of an Isser Derabanan if it'll make the person feel better. So let's say we talked about this before. If a person is sick in a way that it justifies taking a medicine, so you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to pick the medicine up at the pharmacy. Why? Because that doesn't involve really any Isser Deraisa, or it need not involve an Isser Deraisa. If the non-Jew decides to drive, that was his choice. If the non-Jew decides to pay with a credit card and has to sign their name versus paying with cash, so that's their choice. But it wasn't something that I asked the person to do. So picking something up at the pharmacy technically doesn't involve an Isser Deraisa. It only, at the most, would be an Isser Derabanan. That's all that's absolutely, it's only necessary, I should say, to violate an Isser Derabanan. So you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to do things of that nature that only involve an Isser Derabanan. Turning off a light is only an Isser Derabanan. So you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew outright to turn off the light because you want to be able to get sleep, or a person, it's hurting the person's eyes or something, you can ask the non-Jew to turn off the light. Okay, so that was the halacha of a chayla she'ein bo sakana. Now, tzarchei mitzvah is a very interesting topic. Am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha in order to perform a mitzvah? So, Toby, imagine if the shofar is stuck in the tree. Somebody left the shofar in the tree before Yom Tov. So you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov. You're not even allowed to take something off the tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov, because merely taking something off the tree is considered that you're using the tree. So it's an interesting halacha. So you're not allowed to even take something off the tree. However, it's only an Isser Derabanan. Am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to fetch the shofar that's on the tree? Or let's say you forget to you don't have a shofar. Would you be allowed to ask a non-Jew to cut the horn off of the ram and to hollow out the horn, which most likely involves an Isser Deraisa, right? Cutting the horn off of the animal, fashioning the shofar, that's an Isser Deraisa. So theoretically, would I be allowed to ask the non-Jew to perform an Isser Deraisa for the purpose of the Jew of the congregation performing a mitzvah? So the Gemara in Erevin, this is based on a Gemara in Erevin, Samach Zayinim Abiz. So the story was that there was a bris milah schedule for that day. In those days, they used to wash the baby with hot water. So we don't want to burn the baby, so they probably mixed the hot water with cold water. But they had hot water. The hot water probably was a primitive disinfectant. The hot water didn't have any bacteria in it. It was boiled up before. And they would wash the baby with the hot water, with the warm water. They also used to wash the baby after the milah with the hot water. There was once a baby, the Gemara in Erevin tells us a story. There was once a child, a baby, the ishtape chamime, and somehow the hot water spilled before the bris milah. So now, if the bris milah was already performed, so washing the wound with the hot water back in those days was considered a sakana if you're not able to disinfect the wound. So you'd be allowed to heat up the water in order to wash off the wound after the milah. But we're discussing that before the bris milah, they already were aware of the fact that the water spilled. And they used to wash the baby with the warm water before the milah as well. So now we can't go ahead with the milah because we don't have any hot water. So Rabba says, I have hot water. I have my urn. It's sitting on my counter at my house. So I have hot water. Rabba offered that someone should bring the hot water that he has back at home. So they told him, we don't have an Eruv. So the Gemara doesn't mean the type of Eruv, what we think an Eruv is. An Eruv is the Tzuras HaPesach, you know, the string that goes around the city. So the Gemara there is actually not referring to the string. It's referring to the collection of bread that was supposed to be deposited in one of the homes. But let's just say for argument's sake, so Abaye says, we don't have an Eruv. So it's Asur Durabanan for us to carry the water out of your house, Rabba, to where the baby is. So then Rabba suggested, no problem, let's ask the next door neighbor, the non-Jew who lives with us, to carry my hot water out of my house to where the baby is. So the Gemara there challenged that heter, but then eventually the Gemara says, Rabba, and that's how we paskin, Rabba defended his ruling that you don't make a difference between an Issur D'Rabbanan that involves an action versus an Issur D'Rabbanan that does not involve an action. In other words, Amira L'Nachri does not involve any action on behalf of the Jew. It's a more lenient Issur D'Rabbanan. We're only asking a non-Jew to perform to perform whatever the prohibition was. So therefore, Rabba defended his position. You're allowed to ask the non-Jew to bring the water from my house to where the baby is without an Eruv, whatever the Eruv meant over there, without an Eruv. So the case in the Gemara was that we're asking the non-Jew to perform an Issur D'Rabbanan. It's very interesting because this is basically only one of, this is one of a few sources in the Gemara that talks about asking a non-Jew to violate a prohibition. Now, I put it in bold and I put it in brackets because there's a big question. It says these words in the Gemara, but there's a big question if these words are accurate or not. It's a question in the Girsa, in the text of the Gemara. So I put it in bold and I put it in brackets. The Hamar le Omer le Lenochri Zil Achim, because Rabbi says, because I'm not telling you to ask the non-Jew to heat up the water. I'm merely asking the non-Jew to carry the water from my house to where the baby is. Now, these are critical words that are in brackets. Are we goyris these words or not? There's a big difference. If you're goyris these words, if we include these words in the text, that means the Gemara is saying pretty clearly that you're not allowed to ask the non-Jew to actually heat up the water. You're only allowed to ask the non-Jew to carry the water from Rabbi's house to where the baby is without an Eruv. What would the difference be between heating up the water and carrying the water without an Eruv? The difference would be, are we asking the non-Jew to perform an Issur D'Oraisa, or are we merely asking the non-Jew to perform an Issur D'Rabbanan? So these words are critical. If you're not goyris this, then there's no indication. That means you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to even perform an Issur D'Oraisa. But if you do have these words in the Gemara, in the text, that would mean that you're not allowed to ask the non-Jew to perform an Issur D'Oraisa. Now, there's another important Gemara there on the same Amud in Erevin, a similar story. Hahu Yanuka, there was a baby, Dishtape Hamime, his hot water spilled out. Omer Luhu Rabba, Nishayle Le'ime Yitzricha. Ask the mother if she needs hot water. So remember we said before that within the first 7 days or within the first 30 days, there are certain leniencies. So Rava said, ask the mother if she needs hot water. And if she says she needs, Nochem le Nochri Agav Ime, let the non-Jew heat up the water for the baby while he's anyway heating up water for the mother, right? So it was a whole process. First, you have to ask the mother if she needs hot water. If she says yes, then you can get the non-Jew to heat up some extra water along the way on behalf of the mother. And again, that word nachri is in bold and it's in brackets because there's a question if we're goyrisit. So the Rishonim argue if this was speaking about through a non-Jew or through a Jew. Now, how could it possibly be speaking about a Jew? We're talking about a bris milah on the eighth day. How can a Jew possibly heat up the water even on behalf of the mother if the mother is already out of the 7 days? She's within the 30 days. A Jew is no longer allowed to perform melacha once the mother, the mother who gave birth, is beyond the seventh day. So the Poskim say that there's an interesting machlekes. It could be that she's still within the 7 days, me'es la'es, of the 24-hour periods. Seven 24-hour periods. Let's say the baby was born right before Shkia on day one. So that day eight, which is the day of the bris, is still within seven 24-hour periods. So it's very possible that a Jew was the one who was heating up the water for the mother. And because he was allowed to heat up the water for the mother, he was allowed to put extra water in before to heat up the water for the child as well. Others say no. That if it was day eight, then a Jew is no longer allowed to perform the malacha. So it must be that we were asking a non-Jew, and we only allow the non-Jew to heat up water for the baby for the purpose of the bris if he's already heating up the water for the purpose of the mother, who's a chayla she'im by sakana. So it's very critical if we're talking about a Jew or a non-Jew. So let's go through it, and we're going to go back to that girsa in a moment. The Bahag. The Shita of the Halachas Gedoilas, it's brought in Tosfos and Gittin, says that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform even a Malacha de Araisa for the purpose of Mila. So that means you're allowed to ask a non-Jew even to heat up the water, even to cook the water, even to perform a Malacha de Araisa. So I explained that obviously the Bahag, the Halachas Gedoilas, was not Goyris. He did not include those words that are in brackets. He didn't include the first set of brackets that the Gemara there seems to say that you're not allowed to ask the non-Jew to heat up the water, because the Bahag says that you are allowed to ask the non-Jew to heat up the water. And he also did not include in item bays, he did not include the word nachri, because you wouldn't have to go through the hoops of asking the mother if she needs hot water. You would be allowed to ask a non-Jew, according to the Bahag, to heat the water up directly for the purpose of the bris milah. Why go through the mother? You can heat the water up directly for the purpose of the milah. So the Bahag must have understood that the story of Rava, the second story, the reason why we had to heat up the water first on behalf of the mother was because we were discussing a Jew. There was no non-Jew in the vicinity, and the Bahag must hold that you're allowed to violate, a Jew is allowed to violate Shabbos for the mother, even on the day eight, because it was within the seven 24-hour periods. It was still considered day seven as far as the mother was concerned. So the shita of the Bahag is that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha d'oraisa for the purpose of mila. However, the Bahag writes that it's only for the purpose of mila that you're allowed to be matir amira l'nachri. No other mitzvah you can ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha. You can't ask a non-Jew to fetch the shofar from the tree. You're only allowed to ask the non-Jew for the purpose of Mila. Why? Because since Mila itself overrides the Shabbos, so the Chachamim, they followed the lead of the Torah, that we can ask a non-Jew to perform any of the preliminary requirements in order to facilitate, in order to enable the Mila. But any other mitzvah, you wouldn't be able to ask the non-Jew. Now, the Baal Ha'itr says that not only bris milah, but any mitzvah, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew even to perform a malacha d'oraisa. So the Baal Ha'itr understood the Gemara in Erevin the way the Bahag does, that you're allowed to even ask the non-Jew to perform a malacha d'oraisa for the purpose of the milah, but the Baal Ha'itr does not make this distinction. Not only milah, says the Baal Ha'itr, any mitzvah you can ask a non-Jew to perform an isur d'oraisa. It happened to be, it was discussing Mila, but But that Gemara is not the exception. That Gemara is the rule that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform any malacha of deraisa in order to enable the performance of a mitzvah. So again, if there's no shofar to be had, you'd be allowed, according to the Bala Itter, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to fashion a shofar. If you forgot to procure a lulav and esrig, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to harvest the lulav and the esrig on Yontif, even though it's an Issur Doraisa, because according to some, because you're allowed to ask a non-Jew even to perform an Issur Doraisa. That's the Bala Itter. So far we have two opinions. The Shita of the Bahad, that you can ask a non-Jew to perform a Malacha Doraisa, but only for the purpose of Bris Milah, because Bris Milah itself overrides the Shabbos. The Bala Itter learns the Gemara the same way the Bahad does, but the Bala Itter extends it to any mitzvah. You can ask a non-Jew to perform an Issur Doraisa for the purpose of any mitzvah. Now the Rif learns you can only ask a non-Jew to perform an Issur Dirabbanan for the purpose of the Mila. So again, the Rif must have been Goyris. He must have included those words that we bolded in the text. He must have included that in his text in the Gemara, that Rabbah only permitted the carrying of the water without an Erev, but Rabbah would never have permitted heating up the water. And he also must have been learning in the second story that we only permitted the non-Jew to heat up the water for the purpose of the Bris Mila, Agav, the mother. Since we're allowed to heat up water for the mother because she's within 30 days, if she says she needs hot water to drink or whatever, she says that she needs a tea or a coffee, and we need to heat up the hot water for the mother. So Agav, once you're heating up water for the mother, you can ask the non-Jew to include extra water for the purpose of the Bris Mila. But according to the Rif, we never would have allowed heating up water directly for the purpose of the Bris Mila, even through a non-Jew, because we're only allowed to perform an Issur Dirabbanan, only carrying the water without the Eruv. Now, Tosfos in Gittin holds like the Rif, that we only permit the non-Jew to perform a Shvus Dishvus, an Issur Dirabbanan, the Maka Mitzvah. And again, Tosfos holds the same way the Bahag did in his world. Tosfos says that we only permit a shvus de shvus. We only permit you to ask a non-Jew to violate an Issur de Rabbanan for the purpose of Mila, again, because Mila itself is Doicha Shabbos. So Amira Lenachri on an Issur de Rabbanan is Doicha Shabbos for the purpose of a Bris Mila. So Tosfos is the strictest so far of all the opinions. Tosfos says you can only ask a non-Jew to perform an Issur de Rabbanan for the purpose of Mila. He's the most narrow. His heter is the most narrow. You would not even be allowed to ask a non-Jew to fetch the shofar from the tree, because you can only ask a non-Jew to perform an Issur de Rabbanan for the purpose exclusively to Mila, along the lines of the Bahag. So it's very interesting that we have a machlekes between a fundamental machlekes if the Gemara was discussing violating an Issur de Rabbanan through the non-Jew, or violating an Issur Doraisa through the non-Jew. And then we have another machlekes on top of that. Is this Gemara the exception exclusive to Bris Mila, or can we apply it to every mitzvah? And finally, we have the Shita of the Rambam, which is how we paskin. This is the general halacha. It's the Derech Mumutza. It's sort of like the middle of the road. The Rambam says that he only permits asking a non-Jew to violate an Issur Dirabbanan, a Shvus Dishvus, which means that asking a non-Jew to perform an Issur is itself only an Issur Dirabbanan, and we're not even asking him to perform something that would have been Issur Doraisa. We're only asking him to perform something Issur Dirabbanan, so it's a Shvus Dishvus, it's a double Dirabbanan, it's two steps away from a Doraisa. Number one, we're only dealing with an Issur Dirabbanan, and second of all, we're not even doing it ourselves, we're asking a non-Jew, so it's two steps away from an Issur Doraisa. The term is a shvus dishvus. However, the Rambam permits for the purpose of any mitzvah. So the Rambam, and this is the opinion that's brought in Shulchan Aruch. It's sort of like the middle of the road opinion that you can perform a shvus dishvus for the purpose of any mitzvah. So again, we would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to fetch the shofar from the tree, but we would not be allowed to ask a non-Jew to fashion the shofar, because that would be an Issur Doraisa. Lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch and Shin Zayin Sif Hei, we paskin like the Rambam that we're matir any shvus to shvus for the purpose of any mitzvah. Like a shofar or a lulav, let's say the lulav is in a different, let's say the lulav is out of the tchum. You'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to bring the lulav out of the tchum, into the tchum, because it's only in a siddur rabbanan. But you would not permit amira l'nachri on the deraisa. Now, once we permit a shvus to shvus, the tzarech mitzvah, so very often tsar, right, if the person has distress or some kind of pain, it goes along with that. We touched on this before, that if a person has an ailment, we wouldn't put them in the category of a chol she'im by sakana. They have an ailment, a sunburn or some ailment, so we can permit a shvus to shvus, something that only would ordinarily only be us at the Rabbanan, we can permit a non-Jew to perform that on behalf of the Jew in Issid Rabbanan. So we paskin that a shvus to shvus is mutter b'makom mitzvah, and we also hold that a shvus to shvus is mutter b'makom a miksas choyli or a tsar ksas. Now the Magen Avraham writes, even b'shtil hefsid mamon, even if there'll be a loss of money. A common example, let's say a person's freezer breaks on Shabbos, right? So the circuit broke on Shabbos. So I remember when I was living in Miami, so you have to come, I was living in an old apartment building, you'd have to actually come and replace the circuit. You have to physically unscrew the circuit from the building and screw in a new circuit breaker. So that's most likely an issur d'oraisa, right? Because you're taking something off a building and you're reinstalling something new onto the building. It's probably binyan. It would probably be an issur d'oraisa. So we wouldn't be allowed to ask the non-Jew to fix the circuit on Shabbos, because that would be an issur d'oraisa. But could we ask the non-Jew at least to transfer the frozen raw food that we have in the freezer, the meat and the chicken, which most likely nowadays it's considered to be muksa, because nobody would eat raw meat and chicken nowadays. The Gemara discusses if raw meat and chicken is considered muksa or not. There used to be a concept of eating it raw. Nowadays, the Poskim say it's not common to eat the raw meat. Most likely it would be considered muksa. Would we be allowed to ask the non-Jew to bring the frozen pieces of meat that might get ruined if you leave them in the broken freezer? You have to shots up. Could be you have a couple of hours before it starts to defrost. But assuming that it's going to ruin the food, would I be allowed to ask a non-Jew? So the Magen Avraham says that when there's a hefsid, when there's a loss of money, you can permit a mira l'nachri on a shvus to shvus. So transporting the frozen, the raw meat, if it's a loss of money, you'd be allowed. since it's only frozen, if you let it defrost, so that's not, that wouldn't make it muksa, because you're allowed, you would be able to let it defrost and then eat it. So that itself wouldn't render it muksa, because you could theoretically defrost it, or you can put it outside in a warm place, especially in Miami, you'd be able to defrost it. So the question is, could I transport the raw meat, assuming the raw meat is muksa? So the Magen Avraham says that this is also permitted b'makom ashvus d'shvus. Now there's something interesting. The Baal HaItter was the most lenient of the opinions. He learned that you're even allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform an Isser D'Oraisa. He learned that the story of the Gemara was that we were actually going to heat up the water for the purpose of the Bris Mila, not just carry the water without an Eruv. We're going to actually cook up the water. And the Baal HaItter said it doesn't apply exclusively to Mila, it applies to any mitzvah. So the Baal HaItter was actually the most lenient of all the opinions. His opinion was not completely nitche from halacha. His opinion is still brought in the Shulchan Aruch as a minority opinion. It was not totally rejected from halacha. So under normal circumstances, we hold like the Rambam, which was the middle of the road opinion, that we permit amira l'nachri on an issur d'rabbanan. But the Baal HaItter went further, that we even permit amira l'nachri on an issur d'oraisa, and the Baal HaItter's opinion was not totally rejected. We do rely on the Baal HaItter if there's a tzarech gadol, if there's a great need. So the Pesukim can discuss what's considered a great need. So one example they bring is lahasir a michshol from the rabbin. So imagine if the Eruv falls down on Shabbos and it's fixable, right? So now normally fixing the Eruv might only be an issur d'rabbanan. But let's say fixing the Eruv involves an issur d'oraisa. So we're allowed to rely on the minority opinion of the Baal HaItter to avoid a michshol in order that the tzibur should not be michshol, should not sin. People already carried all their stuff. People already carried all their stuff to shul. People are stuck in the street with their items. So you'd be allowed to, and people are going to be carrying unwittingly, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to, even if it would involve an Isser Deraisa. There's a big shaila in the Poskim on Yom Kippur, so the Chasam Sofer discussed it. What happens as the day draws to an end, so it gets dark, and people are all inspired, they want to say the various slichas and piyutim in Ne'ilah, and apparently they used to go late, it was already dark, and it was sundown, so are you allowed to ask a non-Jew to rekindle the candles back then, in order to be able to say the kinos to the slichos, not the kinos, the slichos, and the various piyutim of Ne'ilah. So the Chasam Sofer held no. The Chasam Sofer held, that's not removing a michshol, that's not removing a stumbling block, that's in order to do extra. So we can't rely, that's not enough of a tzarek gadol, just enable us to say more slichos or more piyutim, is not, and this is something that would go on year after year, it doesn't justify asking a non-Jew to perform an Issur D'oraisa. So the Chasam Sofer was very machmir. He said that we can't even rely on the Bala Iter on this minority opinion unless it's a Tzarek Gadol, and merely to be able to say more Slichas and more Piyutim is not considered a Tzarek Gadol. To remove a Miniyah of a Michshol, that people shouldn't stumble and sin, like if the Eruv broke and people will be carrying unwittingly, then we can ask the non-Jew, even if it involves an Issur D'oraisa. But merely to enable us to daven more, that the Chasam Sofer did not allow. However, the contemporary Poskim, it's brought in the name of Rav Aaron Cutler, that he would permit turning on the light, which is an Issur D'oraisa very likely, possibly back then a light bulb would be an Issur D'oraisa, in order for people to learn or to daven, because he held that even for the Toeles of the Tzibor, not just that they shouldn't sin, but able to enable them to do a mitzvah, if it was a communal mitzvah, you'd be allowed to rely on the Bala Iter. So going back to our question before, imagine if the shofar wasn't fashioned, so it would involve an Issur D'oraisa, so if there's no shofar available and the tzibur is going to miss, the entire tzibur is going to miss shofar, there might be grounds to rely on the Bala Iter to ask a non-Jew to perform an Issur D'oraisa. It's pretty theoretical, but theoretically, if you can fashion a shofar through a non-Jew, there would be what to talk about to rely on the Bala Iter for that purpose. If there's a tsar gadol, if somebody has tremendous tsar, there could be that could justify relying on the Bala Iter. Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about turning on an air conditioner, right? So we mentioned if it's very cold, you can turn up the heat. That's clear in the Poskim that turning on the heat, although it's an Issur D'oraisa, we permit Amira L'Nachri, because otherwise it's a Choyla She'imbe Sakana. It could cause a sickness. However, what about turning on an air conditioner if it's too hot? So Rav Moshe Feinstein debated whether or not extreme heat is analogous to extreme cold. He goes back and forth. But some Poskim say that we can anyway rely, because turning on an air conditioner is most likely only an Issur D'Rabbana, because we're not heating anything up. You have to know how the air conditioner works, but there isn't any element inside that gets red hot. We're dealing with electricity. Electricity, according to many Poskim, is only D'Rabbana, so therefore it might only be an Issur D'Rabbana. So we don't require the level of a Chayla She'esh by Sakana, or we don't even require a tzarech gadol, even if you don't consider it to be such a big tzarech, but just to avoid the discomfort, you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to turn on the air conditioner, because it would be a shvus de shvus, it would only be an Issur D'Rabbanan, like we said before. So far we have two categories that we discussed. We discussed a choyla she'ein by sakana, that you can ask a non-Jew even to perform an Issur D'oraisa, and then we discussed the tzarech mitzvah. Normative halacha is you can only ask a non-Jew to perform an Issur D'Rabbanan on the Tzarech Mitzvah, but like the Rambam, but there is the Shita of the Bala Iter that we have in our back pocket, that if there's ever a Tzarech Gadol, a tremendous need, we can rely on the minority opinion of the Bala Iter to allow Amira L'Nachri even on an Issur D'Oraisa. If it's a Tzarech Rav. Imagine if you're hosting a Simcha. So you have 100 people there, and a fuse broke or something, like we discussed before, a fuse broke. So all the food of all the guests would not get cooked. So now you have to know if it's a shaila of Bishul Akum. My father brought that issue up last week. But let's say the food was already Michael Ben Drusar. So it's not a question of Bishul Akum. But the food is basically inedible. Would you be allowed to ask a non-Jew to heat up the food, to continue cooking the food, because it's a Tzerech Rabim, so we can rely on the Shita of the Bala Iter, even if it would involve an Issa Deraisa of fixing the fuse or turning on the fire. Okay, category number 3 is a fascinating halacha, psik resha. So psik resha, we all know, psik resha is an expression in the Gemara. There's a concept called darish enu miskav. The classic example is, I'm allowed to drag a bench in my backyard, assuming there's an Erev. I'm allowed to drag the bench in my backyard, even though it might unwittingly or incidentally create a ditch in the ground, because since it's not inevitable, sometimes when I drag the bench, it makes a chritz, sometimes it doesn't. It's not inevitable. So therefore, you're allowed to do action A, even if it might result in action B, which would be an issur d'oraisa. However, the Gemara has an expression, psik resha b'layomis. So in those days, the people would shech the chicken, and they'd give the head of the chicken to a child to play with as a ball. So the question is, am I allowed to shech the chicken on Shabbos, right, in order to procure the head as a toy for the child? So my intent is not to kill the chicken. My intent is just to get the head. I would love for the chicken to continue living, even if I chop off the head. There's actually, I once read a story that the chicken didn't have a head, but the chicken, apparently the stem nerves were intact, and the chicken ran around it was an item in a circus that it ran around without a head for many years until it choked on a piece of food. In any case, so theoretically, I don't know if that's still considered that it's a lie. But the Gemara has an expression that you can't cut off the head and expect the chicken to live. Sikreshiv alayamas, if you cut off the head, inevitably the chicken will die. So that became now like an expression. Anytime you do an action that's inherently permitted, if it will inevitably bring about a malacha dura, an isser, you're not allowed to do it. It's considered as if you intended. However, there's a leniency. You're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do A if A is permitted, even if it will inevitably result in B, which would even be an isser deraisa, a psik resha. So let's first do the trumas adeshin. This trumas adeshin is brought in the Ramah. So he says like this, Noegim, the custom was that the food was cold. We want to heat up the food. So Noegim, she'ena Yehudim, mo'tzina k'deres min ha'tanurim, that a non-Jew would take the food out of the oven, she'matmina behen, that it was insulated in the oven, and the food was found to be cold. So how do we heat up the food on Shabbos? Mo'shivin o'isayin itol tanur be'sachayrif, they would put the food on the radiator, not in the oven, they put it on the radiator, or on it, and then we'd be allowed to ask the non-Jewish maidservant to turn on the heat, the radiator. Why are we allowed to turn on the radiator? Because otherwise it was cold. And we already said before that we're allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn up the heat if it's cold, because that's considered a chayla she'i by sakana. So you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to first put the cold food on top of the radiator, and then you can ask the non-Jew to turn on the heat. Why? Because I'm allowed to ask the non-Jew to turn on the heat because it was cold. And if it's cold, people can get sick. We said that before. So I'm allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the heat. Derech agav, along the way, the food is going to get heated up. But the main intent of the non-Jew is to heat up the house. The intent of the non-Jew is not to heat up the food. The intent of the non-Jew, the main intent, is to heat up the house. Nevertheless, the Trumas Adeshin permits heating up the food derech agav as a psik resha, as an inevitable outcome of heating up the house. So this becomes now a klal that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do A, to do something that's permitted, even if inevitably something forbidden would result, even if it's an issa deraisa. We would never be allowed to do that. But we're allowed to ask the non-Jew because we're not directly asking the non-Jew to perform an issa deraisa. A common example of this would be that you're allowed to imagine if you left the light bulb in your fridge, so you can't open the fridge because then it'll turn on the light bulb. But you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to open the fridge. Why? Because opening the fridge is intrinsically permitted. It's only that it's going to trigger the light bulb. That's a psik reishon. So a Jew can't do it because he knows that the light bulb will go on. But you can ask a non-Jew straight away to open up the fridge, even though you know it'll trigger the light bulb because it's only a psik reishon. Another example is that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the tap of the hot water. Why? Because there's nothing wrong with turning on the hot water on Shabbos intrinsically. The hot water is already in the water heater, and the water is already hot, and all you're doing is just turning on the tap, allowing the hot water to come out. What's the problem of turning on the tap on Shabbos? Why is it forbidden to turn on the hot water on Shabbos? Because when you turn on the hot water, it triggers a valve in the hot water heater that allows cold water to come in to replace the hot water that you're taking out. And then you're going to be inevitably cooking up new water. So that's a psik reishon, right? You're not doing that. That's not what your primary intent is. My primary intent to draw out the hot water is not that it should refill the tank with cold water. The purpose of drawing the hot water is because I want the hot water in the here and now. Some people even have a mechanism that they close the valve on the hot water heater, and then you're allowed to open the hot water on Shabbos because no cold water will go into the boiler, right? So there's nothing wrong with turning on the hot water. So you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to turn on the hot water because it's only a psik reisha. He doesn't have direct kavana that cold water should replace and go into the boiler. So you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on the hot water. This is all under the heter of psik reisha. So this is heter number three, that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew. A very common example is that sometimes, I remember this once happened, that the whatever it is, children or grandchildren, they come for Pesach, and lo and behold, it's time for the Seder, and the grandchildren, they left all their Pesach projects and their Haggadahs and all that kind of stuff in the car. Now, if I open the car, a light's going to go on. So do I have any way to retrieve the haggadahs and the projects that are in the car? So you can ask a non-Jew to open the car because number one, the car door perhaps is muksa, and which is only the rabbanan, and even if it's opening a light, which could possibly be an issur d'oraisa depending on the type of light bulb, nevertheless it's only a psik reisha, it's not his direct intent. And therefore, you would be allowed to ask the non-Jew to bring in the projects. Even if there's no Eruv, that's only an Issur d'Rabbanan, so it's a Shlus d'Shlus for the purpose of the child, for the purpose of a mitzvah. So you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to fetch the items that were left behind in the trunk of the car or in the car. Moving the car is only an issue at the most of Muksa. Triggering the light is a psik reisha. And even if there's no Eruv, carrying the materials into the house most likely is only an issur d'rabbanan, it's a karmelis if there's no Eruv, and therefore you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to bring the stuff in. Now, who would turn off the hot water? My father asked who would turn off the hot water if non-Jew turned on the hot water. So correct me if I'm wrong, there's nothing wrong with turning off the hot water, because that doesn't do anything. All it does is stop the cold water from coming into the boiler. But I don't believe any malacha is occurring when you turn off the hot water. Correct me if I'm wrong. Now, Bein HaShemashis is another heter. Bein HaShemashis, twilight, between sundown and the stars coming out. So this is a suffix time. It's an area of time that's intrinsically in doubt. So Bein HaShemashis, we don't know if it's still part of Friday. We don't know if it's part of Shabbos. So the halacha is that they permitted certain shvusin Bein HaShemashis. So you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform a malacha, even a malacha deraisa. So it gets confusing, but let's just clarify. General halacha is you can't ask a non-Jew to perform a deraisa, right? That's the general halacha. That was the Rambam. We had that before when we talked about Bris Mil. For a chayla she'en bo sakana, you can even ask a non-Jew to perform a deraisa. A psik reisha is mutter, even if a deraisa will result, because you didn't ask him directly. Bein HaShemashis, you can ask a non-Jew even to perform a deraisa, because since it's a quasi-time, it's a suffix time, it's a twilight, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform a deraisa. So, for example, from sundown until when the stars come out. So, for example, letzarech mitzvah. We once actually talked about this when we were talking about Shabbos candles. But you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to light the Shabbos candles. If the woman forgot to light the Shabbos candles before Shabbos, and especially in the old days, you're sitting in the dark, you'd be allowed to ask the non-Jew to kindle the candles, which is clearly a deraisa, lighting a candle, bein hashmashes. Or, the poskim say, dabar shenechpaz alav, something that's going to create a lot of anxiety. Imagine if the person, if it's a Shabbos, it's a yahrzeit. So the minig is to light a yahrzeit candle. So it's a minig. It's not the end of the world if you forget to light the yahrzeit candle. You can't even consider it letzarech mitzvah. So you wouldn't be allowed to ask the non-Jew to kindle the yahrzeit candle on Shabbos. But bein hashmashes it's brought, something it'll create a lot of anxiety and distress because it wasn't done. You can ask a non-Jew to kindle the yahrzeit candle bein hashmashes. Or anything that's a tzarech Shabbos, or anything that's a hefsid meruba, or a tzarech gadol. Any great need, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew bein hashmashes. Now, it's very interesting because bein hashmashes, we normally consider it from sundown until the stars come out, but when it comes to the zmanim, it's always very complicated. The Vilna Gaon holds that 20 minutes, about 12 or 13 minutes after sundown, it's already vaday Shabbos. Rabbeinu Tam holds that it's still considered weekday until about 12 minutes before after sundown, about 12 minutes what we call the stars coming out. So Rav Moshe Feinstein held that you can really only ask a non-Jew the first half hour after sundown, because once you get past the first half hour, then it might not even be considered bein hashmashes anymore. According to some opinions, it's already vaday Shabbos. So some people are choshish for that. Other people say that everything we refer to as bein hashmashes, you'd be allowed to ask a non-Jew. So now, going back to our example, let's say your grandson left all his Pesach projects in the car, and it was right after candlelight. It's bein hashmashes, right? So there are two reasons why you could ask the non-Jew to get the projects. Number one, it's bein hashmashes. Bein hashmashes, you can even ask him to do an issa d'oraisa. Number two, it's only a psik reisha. See, even after Tzeisek HaChavim, where it's Vaday, Shabbos, or Yomtif, you still would be allowed to ask the non-Jew to fetch the projects, because at most, it would only be a psik reisha. What about asking a non-Jew to turn on a light? So especially if you have a light bulb, the older light bulbs, it would be an Issa D'Oraisa. So on Shabbos, you wouldn't be allowed to ask a non-Jew to turn on a light. That's an Issa D'Oraisa. However, on Yomtif, a lot of poskim hold that kindling a fire from scratch is only asad derabanan. We know that you're not allowed to start a fire from scratch, but you're allowed to add fuel to an existing fire or transfer an existing fire. But lighting a fire from scratch, you're not allowed to do. But a lot of poskim say it's only an isad derabanan. It's not an isad deraisa. So asking a non-Jew to light a fire on Yom Tov would be a shvus de shvus. You would have the leniencies of tzarech mitzvah for the purpose of cooking the food for Yom Tov. You wouldn't be allowed to do it on Shabbos, because then it would be for a deraisa under normal circumstances. But for Yom Tov, it would be an issur derabanan. Now, this is something we left off with last week, derech remiza. Derech remiza means you're hinting. So we talked about this last week. We talked about it the first year. You're allowed to hint. However, it's very narrow. You're only allowed to hint if you don't mention the malacha, and you're only allowed to hint if you don't instruct him. So remember, we talked about hinting that we used to talk. They used to, if the candle needed fixing, they would say wipe your nose, right? That was like a code word for fixing the candle. Wipe your nose, and then the non-Jew would know that he mean that the master of the house means to fix the candle. So that's an instruction. Even though you didn't mention the malacha, you can't do that on Shabbos, because you're directly instructing him. Even though you're couching it in code words, but you're instructing him to do something. So it's only a hint that doesn't mention the malacha, and it doesn't instruct him to do anything. So you casually comment to your non-Jewish friend, I can't fall asleep tonight because I left my light on. So the non-Jew would have to take the initiative on his own to figure out what you need and turn off the light. So we permit Amira Lenachri Derech Remiza. Now, however, right, so my example was, the Pais can bring this example, I can't sleep because the room is too light. So since you didn't mention the malacha, there's no violation of Dabar Dabar, we said this the first week, and I didn't directly instruct him, so he's not my shliach. So therefore, if he turns off the light on his own, he did it on his own. However, in item days, we left off with this last week, remember, even if a non-Jew initiates a malacha on his own, we're not allowed to benefit from that malacha. So turning off the light is not considered benefiting because he didn't create something positive, he merely removed the light. But turning on a light where he created something positive, we wouldn't be able to benefit. So practically speaking, if I'm sitting in a dark room and I can't read, and I say to my friend, my non-Jewish friend, I can't read because it's so dark in here, even if the non-Jew gets the hint and turns on the light on his own, we still would not be allowed to benefit from the light. So hinting to a non-Jew is only permitted if you're not benefiting. If there already is a light, it's just that it wouldn't be sufficient to read easily. It's Tosefes, or he's only adding light, then you can benefit. But you can't benefit from the non-Jew's malacha. So I would really put remiza, hinting, into a separate category. Bein Ashmashis, or Psik Reisha, or Choyle She'im Bei Sakana, these are examples where we actually permit Amira L'Nachri. You can ask him directly, and you can benefit from the result. Remiza is not an example of permitting Amira L'Nachri, it's avoiding Amira L'Nachri. But then we're subject to the prohibition of benefiting from the non-Jew, because we're not permitting Amira L'Nachri, we're getting around it. We're hinting, and he's doing it on his own. We never permitted you to ask him to turn on the light. We only figured out a way to get him to do it on his own. But then we're subject to all the halachas that we can't benefit from any positive accomplishment that the non-Jew. Last but not least is kablanis. Kablanis means a subcontractor, a contractor, where I'm not paying him for the actual time. I'm paying him for the job well done. So, for example, this is why you're allowed to give your suit into the cleaners on Friday, even if the non-Jewish cleaners will be cleaning the suit on Shabbos. The reason is because you didn't ask them to do it on Shabbos. I'm not paying him to do it on Shabbos. I'm paying him for the result of the job. It was his decision to do it on Shabbos. That's kablanis. It's only mutter if you didn't actually ask him, or you didn't set up a system that forces him to do it on Shabbos. Let's say you give your suit in right before Shabbos, and you tell the non-Jew, assuming that the cleaners is open, I'm going to pick it up Saturday night. So you're essentially forcing him to do it over Shabbos. That's the same thing as asking him to do it over Shabbos. But let's say you give your car into the mechanic on Friday, and you say, I'll pick it up Monday. So he might give you a call on Saturday night, you know, I got a chance, I went into the shop on Saturday, and I fixed your car. That's not a problem, because he was doing it on his own time. You're not paying him to do it on Shabbos, you're paying him for the job well done. He's a kablan, and therefore, if he decided to do it on Shabbos, it's a daita de nafshei, that was his own decision, and therefore you'd be allowed to allow that to happen. However, the poskim say this only applies to metaltalim, to movable objects, where the job is being done off of your premises, it's being done in his premises. But imagine if you have a voidus karka. Imagine if you have a field that needs to be plowed, or you have a building that needs to be constructed. So over there, since it's a voidus karka, it's considered that the malacha is being done on the premises of the Jew. And not only that, the karka is something that it attracts attention. So then there's a maris ayin. There's the appearance of wrongdoing, because people don't know clearly that he's a kablan. For all they know, maybe you called the person to come. So imagine if you call, so there's mowing the lawn, right? You have somebody mowing the lawn. So it's much better to ask the service not to come on Shabbos, because if they come on Shabbos, it attracts attention. It's maris ayin. Maybe you asked him to do it on Shabbos. Some people are lenient, because in today's day and age, everybody knows that it's a kablan. Everybody knows that it wasn't hired on the spot. Everybody knows that he comes and goes on his own decision. But still, others say that the halacha was already established, that you should not have a voidus karka. So contractors, a roofer, or any electrician, all of these things that have to do with karka, with real estate, should not be done even through a contractor on Shabbos, because it's maris ayin. The poskim say that if it's out of the tum, that if you have an investment property or some property somewhere else where no Jews live in the vicinity, it's out of the tum, so then as long as it's truly a contractor, so you're not violating a nir in the nachri, and there's no maris ayin because it's out of any eyesight where any Jewish people live, because it's out of the tum of any Jew, so therefore you would not, right, and Chol HaMoed would be the same thing. If it out of the tum doesn't help for Chol HaMoed. If it's a place where non-Jews, because you can travel on Chol HaMoed, if it's a place where non-Jews where Jews frequent, so then it would be a shayla of Amir Lenachri, even on Chol HaMoed. So this is an interesting case where Chol HaMoed could possibly be more stringent than Shabbos and Yom Tov, because if you have some investment property somewhere out of the tum, where you couldn't access that area on Shabbos, but you could access that area on Chol HaMoed, so then you would not be allowed to have the contractor working on Chol HaMoed, even out of the tum, although on Shabbos and Yom Tov, ironically, he would be able to, because no Jew could go out of the tum on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Okay, we'll stop over here. So these are the various heterim and scenarios that we would permit Amir Lenachri. Okay, Yashik Koyach, everybody.